was angry, to be very honest with you. I was really angry. I would be at Rikers. Rikers is an island. There is no access to phone. There is no access to anything. And you're surrounded by inmates that are serving time for selling weed in Central Park. Being arrested should not be a death sentence. And at Rikers Island, there is a lot of human rights violations. No one was doing anything about it.
And I oftentimes feel, even with the work that we do with Black Ambition, is there's a level of financial desperation that grapples early stage entrepreneurs because they don't have the friends and family around, because they don't come from a number of things.
My name is Anna Pompa Alarcón Ross. Many women still live in silence, and I want every woman to know that her story and her voice matters. Many women don't have access to the same kind of opportunities and information that I have, and I think it is our social responsibility to be a voice for the voiceless.
So me being an Indigenous person, watching what is happening with other Indigenous people, and then watching communities that have raised funding, that have built their entire branding around supporting systemically marginalized and oppressed communities. But the moment it serves them, the proximity to power, to whiteness, to money, we do not care anymore. We don't give a
On this episode, I'm joined by Anna Pompa Alarcón. She's the founder of Founders Registry. We're getting ready to have a conversation about not only the origins of the companies that she founded, the advocacy work that she has done from prison reform to advocacy around and building companies around survival of domestic violence and rights, raising two amazing kids, as well as more than anything, also supporting founders at the highest level so that they can go out and raise the capital that they need for financial liberation so that more good people have the good money to put more good out into the world. Anna, welcome to the So Ambitious podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
So Anna, you're the founder of Founders Registry,
yes.
Techstar alum, mom of two, global world changer. Tell the audience a little bit more about the work that you do.
The work that I currently do. Mm-hmm. So the work that I currently do, right now at this moment, October 2023, is one of the most exciting ones I've ever done, because currently, my company works with the finalists of Black Ambition, which has been so inspiring and truly one of the most meaningful things that we've ever done. So our company supports systemically purposefully marginalized founders in raising capital. So everything that has to do with how do you get capital, how do you present yourself to investors and all of that. And currently we're working with Black Ambition and the 50 finalists of this year's cohort.
And so you're a bit of a serial entrepreneur. Tell us a little bit more about some of the companies that you've started.
So the first company I started out of Rikers Island in New York City, which is a jail. And I started by trying to figure out how we could have a more just social justice system. And basically the idea behind, well, it was not a company. I identified that a lot of people that were Latina, just like me, did not understand the difference between a felony and a misdemeanor. And a lot of these people would take felony charges in exchange for time served. And soon I was like, why are they taking felony charges? What's a felony? And everyone's like, oh, it's just a piece of paper. And I thought, I don't think that that's a piece of paper, because I am witnessing that this piece of paper is being offered to Black and brown people. So there has to be more to this piece of paper. Educated myself and then tried to figure out how can we bridge the gap, the educational gap, when it comes to what kind of plea deals marginalized people take and how can we get that information to them safely. Mm-hmm. Next, I identified that a lot of the people took those plea deals because they were undocumented and they were afraid that there's going to be even further consequences. And so the very first tech company that I started was an anonymous social network that used one-way cryptography. Mm-hmm. Meaning that all of the user data that we had collected stayed safe from law enforcement agencies. And it was kind of like a Reddit, but at that time, Reddit had massive issues with white supremacists on the platform. So we were like, that is not a safe space to have these kind of conversations. And so that ended up being the first company that I founded.
Mm. What brought you personally to that, to like founding that company and really kind of challenging this cause?
I was angry, to be very honest with you. I was really angry. I spoke very little English. I would be at Rikers. Rikers is an island on top of it. So you're on an island. There is no access to phone. There is no access to anything. And you're surrounded by inmates that are serving time for selling weed in Central Park. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and now you're taking a felony charge and you cannot afford to bail yourself out. Mm-hmm. Being arrested should not be a death sentence. And at Rikers Island, there is a lot of human rights violations. Mm-hmm. No one was doing anything about it. And I got so frustrated. I got so angry. And I experienced myself a lot of abuse at Rikers. And I didn't know how to help myself. So the one person that I had ever met in New York City at that time, because I had just immigrated, was someone that called himself an entrepreneur. I did not know what an entrepreneur is, but he seemed like the only wealthy person. So I asked him for a meeting and I explained to him the idea that I had. And I said, the only thing I need is someone that has money that can build this. And he said, why can't you build it? And I'm like, wow, how am I going to build this? I just need someone to give me technology because I have all of these people that need the technology. I have the community. I just need someone that knows how to build a tech company and how to get funding. And yeah, that that day in his house in Brooklyn, we basically started my first company. He was the one that introduced me to my very first investor that ended up being a lead investor that invested in multiple companies of mine. Yeah. And that's how it all started. I was really angry and I could no longer stay silent.
How do you get someone that you recently met to introduce you to an investor?
Yeah, it was really interesting. He said to me, I'm going to help you, but only if you make me an advisor. I am like, I don't know what that is. He said, I get equity in your company. I'm like, I don't have a company. He's like, we'll figure that one out. Yeah. Once you have it, I want equity in your company. I was like, you can have as much equity as you want. Mm-hmm. I don't have anything. You know, I don't have any money. I don't have a company. Feel free to take as much as you want. He was like, that's not what you should ever offer someone, yeah. But I appreciate it. I was like, how much do I offer someone? He's like, that's not something you should be asking your advisor. That's something you should be asking your attorney. I'm like, I don't have money for an attorney. He said, that's what deferred fees are for. I'm like, what are deferred fees? So basically, I had a crash course in entrepreneurship. He said, you know what? I'm going to do one test with you. I'm going to introduce you to an investor that says no to almost all investors, to almost all entrepreneurs. My gut feeling tells me he's going to see something in you that I see in you. And if you pass that test, I'm going to help you get in a law firm that gives you deferred fees. I'm going to help you create the company. I'm going to take equity as your advisor. And I will advise you how to build that company. And I said, deal. So I had this meeting with this investor. I was so blissfully unaware. I mean, I didn't have a pitch deck. I also didn't know what a pitch deck was at that point. So I showed up at the meeting and he asked me, how much money have you raised so far? And I said, zero. Mm-hmm. And he said, why haven't you raised a friends and family round at least to get this off the ground, to get like, you know, an MVP? And I said, of what? Of tacos? And he just looked at me and I could tell that he has never had a conversation with someone like me. And I'm like, boy, I don't know where to begin with, but there is absolutely no money here mm-hmm. where anyone could invest a family and friends round in me. He, I think, told this day that the thing that convinced him was that he asked me, if I would give you money, how would you build a company? And I looked at him and I said, to be very honest, I have absolutely no idea. Mm-hmm. I have no idea. What I can tell you, though, is that I will solve this problem until there is some kind of solution. I am not going to give up. That's the one thing I can promise you. How? Mm-hmm. I don't know. And, you know, we had this hour-long conversation, and in the end, he said, I'm going to give you $50,000 right now, and if you come back in 3 months and you reach the milestones that you and I are going to agree on right mm-hmm. now, I will help you raise more money. So I said, okay, what are the milestones? He said, what do you think you're able to do in 3 months? And I was like, I can build an app. I'm going to do all of these things. And I walked outside. I had to open my bank account real quick, cash the check in. And then I built the company or the first MVP within 2 months. So I came back to him and I said, well, we said 3 months. It's only been 2 months. So now I want you to give me a better valuation. And in fact, I want you to lead my round. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you have gotten extremely cocky for someone who didn't even know what a startup was 2 months ago. And I was like, that's the only way that we're going to change things. Yeah. And so he ended up leading the round, writing me, I think, 8 more checks. And that's how I was able to start the first company and hire my team.
Nice. Let's go back a little bit, right? And so you said there were a lot of, there were more things you did not have and did not know than that you had and knew in at that time, right? Where, what resources, what crash course got you up to speed to get you to that point where you can negotiate better on your behalf?
I think I had a lot of privilege of education, mm-hmm. But having the intersection of having the privilege of having had education while also coming from people that weren't even able to finish elementary school was a very unique mix because it gave me the experience of both sides. I had a lot of white privilege because people perceived me as white, but at the same time, I was their diversity ticket, which at the time I did not realize. You know, I was in my 20s. I was very new to the United States, and I was blissfully unaware. Looking back, I think that that really helped me open a lot of doors because people wanted to be viewed as investing in diverse founders, and funny enough, they thought that was me. But I do think that sadly, and fortunately, but sadly, that's probably what opened a lot of doors, that investors were like, she's Latina, she's Mexican, she's an immigrant, this is great, but she also, you know, is perceived as white enough for me to not have some kind of PR scandal, so I'm just going to write her a check. And I never took those checks. My cap table was 80% people of color. Most of them were black women, Afro-Latinas, and Latinas. But I do think that it opened a lot of doors because a lot of venture capital firms were desperate to find diverse founders, and everyone was struggling with a pipeline. And I was their ticket into all of that. And on top of it, our company was solving a social justice issue. So it's hard to look back and admit that about my own company. But, you know, a decade later, it's easier to look back and be like, I was really their diversity ticket, like me. But I think that that's the truth.
Yeah. How did you reconcile that, though? Right. Because I think a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of programs have been started even in the last 2 to 3 years after the murder of George Floyd, and every corporation and their mother had a program, had a fund, had some sort of like massive D&I initiative, like all the things, right? And I think a lot of founders, while the faucet literally turned on in a number of ways, a lot of them also realized what was happening and kind of grappled with that, right? Like, do I realize the role that they need me to play in this moment, or do I just take the money so that like the ends meet the means, right? Like, how did you personally grapple with that? What were some of the conversations that you had with yourselves or others around that?
I mean, I really was unaware when it happened. So looking back, I would do things differently, but also I have compassion for myself. Like, I was brand new in this country. I barely spoke English. I did not understand a lot of the culture. The first time I realized it was when a group of students did a walkout. It was a talk I gave at Harvard, and it was for Latina students. And the first thing that I said is that I feel like it's extremely important that when someone like me takes up space and is on stage as a Latina representing Latinas right now, that it is my responsibility to acknowledge first that I have massive privilege in comparison to brown and black Latinas. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we need to be aware of and we need to use to open doors for others and pass on the mic. As I was talking, I was just trying to explain to them intersectionality, basically. Everyone started whispering in the audience. And before I could finish my thoughts, they did a walkout. That's how offended they were. Why? Well, because a lot of the Latinas at Harvard, at least back then, were white Latinas that had the same privilege that I had, but that were completely offended by me calling it out. And that's when I kind of realized, that's what I'm going to do in the future, so loud and from the rooftops until everyone realizes that. Because the thing that makes me the most ashamed of my culture is the colorism that we have. Mm-hmm. And if that's how my own community is going to respond to this, I'm just going to start talking about that every single day, and I'm not going to shut up anymore. And so that's actually a big part of how I started Founders Registry, is that all of my investors, everyone on my cap table was like, Well, Anna, we would like to invest in more diverse founders. We just don't see them, you know. There is no founders. Like, we don't see them. The founders that apply to us, that walk in our office, they're all the same type of founders. We just don't see them. And I'm like, interesting. Because I live in LA and I see only those kind of founders. All of my friends are brown and black people. Yeah. How do you not see them? And soon enough, I realized it's not even that they don't see them. It's that startup and venture capital has its own language. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know that language, people in our industry will dismiss you before you get even the foot in the door. Even if you're an incredible founder, even if you've built an incredible company, even if you have all the numbers that a white tech bro on a napkin idea does not have. Mm-hmm. They will not take you seriously if you don't know the language that we speak in our industry. And I think that one of my biggest benefits as someone who has, again, had the luxury of education, I learned a lot of languages, including English. So I learned startup at the same time as I learned English, mm-hmm. except English, there's a dictionary. There is no dictionary for startup. And so noticing that's the gap, that's one of the things that I'm going to really focus on and narrow down. And so the first people that I would mentor and just try to help and introduce to my investors, I would always look at who is the most marginalized person in the room. Mm-hmm. What are five doors I can open for them? And so that's first how I started the company before it was actually a company. And that's, I hope that's still what I do, is that my biggest, the biggest thing that I want to do as, you know, as a person myself, but also I want founders and investors that work with me to take away is whatever privilege you have, whatever kind of privilege it is, right? Whether that's money, education, skin color, race, whatever it is, use that privilege to open doors. Mm-hmm. Too often I have seen white founders, especially all the white feminists, girl bosses that came about at the same time that I did. I would share the stage with them and they love to talk about their privileges and acknowledge it. And I kept sitting there thinking, you acknowledging your privilege doesn't do shit for anyone. Like, you are literally just sitting there saying, I'm going to acknowledge my privilege. I'm like, what do I get from that? Mm-hmm. Like, you're sitting there acknowledging your privilege so that your person in the audience can take a video, post it on Instagram, and everyone's going to applaud you for acknowledging your privilege. Mm-hmm. Are you using it? And as someone who knew all of these girl bosses, I was like, no, you're not. You're not using it. And I know that. And I know that firsthand because I've asked you for introductions to your investors and you ghosted me mm-hmm. and you ignored me. And I've watched you whenever a black female founder walks over and tries to talk to you to be like, honey, just give me a second. And you walk away and you never talk to them again. Mm-hmm. But here you are sitting on stage talking about, oh, my privilege. Use it.
Yeah.
Don't miss your chance to win $1 million. Applications for the 2024 Black Ambition Prize Competition are now open. Are you building a high-growth business in tech, healthcare, AI, media entertainment, or consumer goods and services? If so, we'd like to help you scale. Apply for a chance to win capital, coaching, and access to an amazing community of diverse innovators at blackambitionprize.com.
You bring up an interesting point, right? Because when there came a point when Derek and I were running Black Tech Week where we realized that we were creating the stage in which that bad behavior was starting to happen, mm-hmm. if that makes sense, right? Meaning the people that we were inviting to speak, although just phenomenal investors, highly regarded, but they were doing exactly what you said. They would come on the stage, use the name of like, I'm at Black Tech Week, right? Or I'm at this diverse conference. And then ultimately just ghost the entrepreneurs, make a lot of promises mm-hmm. or no promises at all. Like, you should just be happy I'm here. And then, or more than anything, ghost the entrepreneurs. Right. And there comes a point where you realize that people are using you in that way mm-hmm. and it wanes on you. Right. Mm-hmm. Which was something that weighed really heavy on me. My question for you around that, though. Right. Because we're at a point where it is what it is. And you get adults to a certain level, it's really hard for an adult to change their behavior. And that's what we're talking about and dealing with a lot of people in the venture and investment space. They are who they are, mm-hmm. right? At what point do you channel that energy to saying like, well, let me just go find and only work with more Latina investors and like stop trying to change like systematic bad behavior from people that ultimately do not care? because that's where I'm at, right? Like, that's the, you understand what I'm saying,
yes,
right?
And so I had that thought too, yes.
When do we shift the fight towards, or the energy towards fighting people who are not going to change their behavior to people that like have the dollars, have the resources, may not be connected in a way that it like galvanizes the resources in support of more. But like for you as an ecosystem, like when does that shift for you? Or has it already shifted for you? And just like, I don't have time for that anymore. Like, I'd rather, you know, build with my own.
That's how I started out. I started out this way. I was like, I'm just going to give the deal flow to all of the venture capital firms that invest in minority founders. And I'm only going to refer our founders to ecosystems, accelerator programs, et cetera, that are specifically designed for marginalized founders. I'm going to say something very controversial, but
girl,
unfortunately,
we like it spicy here. Go ahead.
So there are no worse venture capital firms than Latina venture capital firms. I have never had so many bad experiences as with Latinos. And that was really hard for me. Mm-hmm. I wanted to believe that this is me. I have worked with so many founders and they're all like, I cannot work with Latino VC firms. And I'm like, And at first I didn't say anything. I would have my blacklist and I would just take notes. And eventually I was like, got it. So we're actually a big part of the problem. So the answer is, I don't know. I really still struggle with that. I struggle with, where do you send founders if you feel like even the people that are offering the solution, in most cases, are actually benefiting from the closeness, from the proximity to whiteness. Mm-hmm. They themselves are trying to do whatever they can to get power and to get money and to be perceived as white as possible. And that, unfortunately, has been my experience. And in the last 12 days, some of the organizations, the very few organizations, focused on supporting systemically marginalized founders. I would never, after the statements that they have issued in the last 12 days, ever send a marginalized founder again to these organizations. Was I surprised? Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. It was more that finally we're calling ourselves what we are, not that we didn't know that. It's hard. It's really hard. I am an indigenous Mexican. I'm Aztec. Those are my ancestors. So me being an indigenous person, watching what is happening with other indigenous people, and then watching communities that have raised funding, that have raised capital, that have built their entire branding around supporting systemically marginalized and oppressed communities. But the moment it serves them, the proximity to power, to whiteness, to money, we do not care anymore. Mm-hmm. We don't give a shit. And to me, it's been one of the most gut-wrenching weeks, because the few mentors that I had in the space, the few organizations that I've still trusted, where I was like, okay, I'm watching you, most of them are not around for me anymore. Mm-hmm. Most of them, I would now tell my founders, stay as far away as humanly possible. People need to walk the walk. And if they're not doing this, they need to suffer the consequences. And the consequences is the deal flow. Do not take money from people that will throw you under the bus the second they have the opportunity.
Mm. Whoa. You said a lot.
And sorry.
No. Not bad stuff. Just stuff that I want to unpack, right? And so you were very transparent in what you just said. How do we create more transparency? Because the bad behavior continues because enough people refuse to speak out or are afraid to speak out because of their potential loss to proximity, to power, and wealth. How do we even begin to fix that or give people, founders, other investors, even corporations, right, like the courage to help clean up this mess? Because if not, it continues, right? Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on like that road ahead?
I think that it's really about time that everyone that has been systemically, purposefully marginalized has to have each other's back. Mm-hmm. I can, you know, due to the colorism in the Latina community, I can tell you that's not the case. Yeah. Like the moment that non-Black Latina people see Black people, there is immediately, again, the proximity to power. Mm-hmm. I was not raised this way, but that's also, you know, if you immigrate as an adult, you have culturally, you don't have the same context and the same upbringing. I truly believe that, well, I don't believe it. There's data to back up that if all indigenous, brown, black people, Muslims, Arabs would work together and have each other's back, the buying power, the purchasing power that we have, we could take over the economy. I can just speak for my own community. And the first way to realize that is that we have to stop voting against our own interest. Mm-hmm. We have to make sure that we educate our own communities. And unfortunately, in a very politically charged environment, that means meeting people where they're at with compassion, which is sometimes really hard, especially when you're like passionate like me and I'm like, I just want to shake you. That's not going to change anything, right? And so for myself, I think a big change has to happen that our community realizes they will not support you. Mm-hmm. They will not support you. They might do it right now because it serves them. You got a seat at the table right now. But that seat is going to be taking away from you faster than you can count to three. The second one of theirs wants to join the table. Mm-hmm. And that's a realization that I think that my community needs to have, and an understanding that we need to really unpack a lot of what we've been taught in our own culture.
Yeah. I mean, so much of what you said boils down to financial liberation, mm-hmm. right? And I oftentimes feel, even with the work that we do with Black Ambition, is there's a level of financial desperation that grapples early stage entrepreneurs because they don't have the friends and family mm-hmm. around, because they don't come from mm-hmm. a number of things that forces them to sometimes compromise mm-hmm. on the decision of taking a check, even though there's all this history, toxic relationship to the money or where it comes from, the relationship, the bad, like there is that part that I think a lot of entrepreneurs navigating the venture space oftentimes for the first time grapple with, like, you know, the lesser of two evils for, mm-hmm. for a certain extent. And so, like, even when we think about the work at Black Ambition, is like, how do we get them capital faster mm-hmm. so that they don't have to then work with investors or institutions that we know historically and continue to be really bad players? Like, how do we get them capital faster so that they can make the best decision for the companies that they're building?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I have two answers. One of them is when our founders work with us, there is a reason why one of our team members, who happens to be here, Gabby, mm-hmm. she's a social worker. Why do we have a social worker who has never raised capital? Because she talks about money wounds with them. Mm-hmm. Because that's one of the things that we need to first, you know, unpack.
Yeah.
And I also always tell my founders, that's the first thing I tell all of my founders. I'm like, it's very easy to sit here and just say, walk away. This is blood money. You don't want that. Mm-hmm. It is very easy. I have been in situations where I did not have a roof over my head, and I'm a single mom of two kids, and we did not know where to sleep that night. So I get it, okay? If you're not in the position to be able to turn away that check, take the money. Mm-hmm. Because it's just not the reality of most underrepresented founders that they can just be like, you rubbed me the wrong way, or I saw a tweet of yours and I'm just not going to take the money. That's not the reality of them. My recommendation whenever I work with, and I often work with founders that say, I just hate the investors on my cap table. What do I do? Like, I can't get out of it. And I always tell them, scale the company as fast as possible. Sell it, even if it's not the exit that you wanted. Even if it's just like a smaller exit, sell the company, start the next one. Use the money from the exit and build your next company. I don't have the answers. I do not believe that we should shame anyone who has been marginalized for where they get the money from. Mm-hmm. So while I educate people and I want them to realize right now there is a Google Doc where VCs can sign their support for genocide, and I do share that list, and I'm like, these are investors I would highly recommend to never take money from. I will urge my community to cut them out of deal flow. At the same time, if you're one of my founders and one of those venture capital firms has offered you money and that's your lifeline, take the money. I will help you. How do we sell that company? How do we scale it? And I fundamentally believe, which is a paradox, but I hate capitalism. And I also believe that capitalism is the solution for a lot of problems of our community. So I'm like, how do we get our people in positions of power, mm-hmm. meaning money, meaning wealth. How do we get them into politics? How do we get them to run Fortune 500 companies? But it's hard. I don't have the answers. I wished I had.
Yeah. So something that you said about your team member being a social worker, right? And then being able to heal what I always call the toxic relationship that many people in diverse communities have to money, right? Like every financial predatory thing has happened to all of our communities over the years that makes it very hard for us to evaluate our companies at the right level, to trust or feel like maybe something's too good to be true. Mm-hmm. And then more than anything, be able to trust ourselves, our partners and people that we bring in order to build the companies. And so that's one end, right? Mm-hmm. And then on the other end, you've done work with women that have been involved in domestic violence. You're doing work with and have done work around solving solutions around prison reform. Like those are very heavy things to take on, right? And so like how do you take care of yourself and or how do you compartmentalize those things, because there's so many things coming at you all at the same time and you are building the solution for so many of those things.
Oh God, I'm the worst person when it comes to any of this. I don't know. I'm not good at that. I'm really bad at self-care. Mm-hmm. I will tell you though that everything I do now for a living sets my soul on fire. Mm. I've never had that before in my whole life. So when I work and I work with founders, I truly get so excited. I feed off of their energy and I'm just so excited to see them thrive. I think literally the only self-care that I have is, you know, my children. I'm a very, very, very involved mom. Both of my kids have special needs. So it is tough to be an immigrant, a single mom, and then you have 2 out of 2 kids having special needs mm-hmm. and battling all of this. So I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I have any time for self-care because I don't. But I will tell you that, you know, spending time with my children or spending time with my founders, to me, that's life. Yeah. Like I have truly built a life where I don't have to escape from reality. It's quite the opposite. Like my friends will say, I've texted you 10 times and you're not responding. And I'm like, I am so sorry. They're like, just, are you okay? And I'm like, no, I'm living my best life. I'm okay. I don't have time to text right now. I don't know. It's not healthy. It's not sustainable. I'm like, ask me and in 5 years.
So just to close out, I want to ask you this question, right? And it's kind of a question that we use and have used to frame our work with Black Ambition, which is, who are you uninterrupted? And so if nothing ever stood in the way of you achieving success, Anna, like what would your life look like? What would your work look like? What would your family community look like if nothing ever stood in the way of you doing what you do?
It's funny. We talked about it this morning. I always envisioned having a huge house where my friends, my family, my kids all live under the same roof. But then at the same time, we have community events where founders walk in and out, and it's kind of like a shared community space. Mm-hmm. One of the things I would like to do the most, if I could just do whatever I wanted, would be to actually write checks to founders myself. Mm-hmm. Every time I had the opportunity to start a fund and LPs would offer me the money, it never felt right. I might do it one day, but in an ideal world where I could just do whatever I wanted, I would like to be the person that actually writes the checks, mm-hmm. which is hard because as the person writing the checks, you have to say no 99% mm-hmm. of the time, which is why for now I have chosen that I want to be the person that turns my founders into the 1% that gets the yes.
Nice.
In an ideal world, I would like to have both. Mm-hmm. I don't know how, but that would be a dream come true.
Nice. I love it. I love it. Anna, tell everyone where they can find you online and continue to follow you in your journey.
Our company's name is Founders Registry and my name is Anna Pompalarcon mm-hmm. and my handle is Absolute Anna on all platforms.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Give her a round of applause.
Heineken is proud to support Black Ambition in helping to unlock opportunities for its participating founders.